Hey again, everybody. It's time for another episode of BitNote, where we'll be playing some great video game music and talking about the games they're from. Hope you enjoy. All right, I think it's time we start things off with a great track from a pretty well-known game. It's kind of an epic sort of adventuring game, so I think the music fits it very well. Have a listen. And that was Nate's Theme by Greg Edmondson. It was from Uncharted by Drake's Fortune, which was developed by Naughty Dog. Now, Naughty Dog is actually a pretty well-known game development studio. They've done a lot of games, and early 90s, so when games were really developing, and they're known for three main game series. One of them, of course, was Crash Bandicoot. They made most of the Crash Bandicoot games, so that thing about the coyote who was jumping around and kind of defined the cutesy mascot of the PlayStation era, they developed them. Then, of course, they developed the Jak and Daxter series, which was also pretty cool. It was just some fun platforming, and I played music from that game before, and it's just a lot of fun. But both Jak and Daxter and Crash Bandicoot, they all had sort of a cartoony feel. But for the PlayStation 3, you know, they had Crash Bandicoot for the PlayStation and Jak and Daxter for the PlayStation 2. But for the PlayStation 3, they went in a whole new direction with Uncharted. The first game of this series is Uncharted Drake's Fortune, in which you can control a character called Nathan Drake, who's apparently a descendant of Sir Francis Drake, the English pirate who at times had authorization from the Queen and other times didn't quite. So essentially it's set in the modern day with Nathan Drake trying to trace his ancestors' legacy and trying to figure out about something that's called El Dorado, which apparently is a way of getting huge amounts of riches and huge amounts of gold. So he goes exploring, getting financed by a peppy TV reporter who's helping him, whose company gives him funding to go on the expeditions. But while they're sort of exploring ancient ruins, dealing with traps, trying to figure it out, suddenly a bunch of people with machine guns start popping up and shooting at them. And long story short, that sort of sets the tone for the rest of the game. The rest of the game is you trying to follow on this track, trying to seek this El Dorado, which, as you learn, isn't so much a city, but something that is far different and has strange powers. And meanwhile, you're dealing with all these hired mercenaries who are also trying to track it down. And in the meantime, you're going on all these tropical, lush locales and dealing with intense firefights and puzzle solving and everything. And if some of this sounds familiar, well, you can see it kind of is. Because a lot of it's drawn with from a lot of those 30s adventure serial films from the, in the 30s, of course, and which in a lot of ways set the tone for a lot of the adventuring stories that were to follow. Everything from Tomb Raider to, in terms of video games, and of course also Indiana Jones, all took inspiration from this whole adventuring genre where people go through ruins and try to find great new... And try to on the track of some ancient treasure, and there's always this evil guy on the other side who's got this whole like army of trained people and keep putting you in tight spots, and that's kind of the inspiration where it goes. You spend most of the time on this lush island, and like I said, dealing with a lot of intense gunfights and stuff, interspersed with the odd bit of puzzle solving. Not to mention climbing, because honestly, Nathan Drake tends to climb and jump and swing and go all climb up all sorts of surfaces, but overall, it's just that's the theme it goes for, a great big adventure. If I had anything to say, sometimes I think it just gets a little too heavy with the gunfights, and sometimes it repeats the locales a little, but it's still sort of funny. It's still sort of a fun game. I think my favorite part is how the characters are rendered in the game. I mean, you know, Nathan Drake is kind of like, you know, the dialogue they gave him isn't just, you know, a tough guy. He's kind of like a sort of more... meant to be a more likable guy with just, if you're in a firefight and a grenade falls right beside you, you'll suddenly hear Nathan going, no, 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 or something like, this is not good, or something. And just, that's good because it's, not only does it give you a cue that, oh, you better get away from that grenade as fast as you damn well can, but you also get the idea that, you know, you're playing a character that is reasonably afraid of grenades. And while that might seem surprising if you're not familiar with video games, in games, sometimes grenades tend to be something that a lot of characters shrug off. I think criticism of certain grenades are so weak that they tend to get referred to as bunny farts by some people, but clearly not in this game. Another interesting thing, and I'm kind of surprised because this is something that this game gets right that a lot of other Hollywood movies that are in the same genre get wrong, is they've actually got a female supporting character who actually seems to know what she's doing and relatively adventurous. I mean, it's kind of crazy how even modern movies, I mean, a few decades ago it was kind of okay, you'd have the wilting, you know, young woman who the man would go on the heroic fight and the woman would stand there and just go, oh, quickly, be careful, and then she might just grab a vase and if she's lucky, smash it over the actual bad guy's enemy instead of the actual hero's enemy while the two of them are struggling. But like I said, there's nothing wrong with that character being used once in a while because, you know, it's a comedy stock character. But it seemed to get, like, a lot of movies and stuff couldn't seem to have any female character fitting other roles, with the odd exception here and there. But even then, they tended to fall back. The frustrating thing about this isn't so much about specifically feminism, although I suppose that always pops up in issues like these. It's the fact that people are just so damn unoriginal with the character. And what's more, if a female character has a full ability to take on a task and do something, or at least within their character it's reasonable that they do, and then they don't do that, it's just frustrating, makes the character less likable, and it's just kind of annoying, just like any sort of continuity error in the game would be. So in this case, you've got this journalist called Elena Fisher, and she's with you from pretty much the start of the game, and even right from the start where suddenly you're in a post that's suddenly attacked by a whole load of bunch of pirates on water skis and stuff. She actually takes the gun and realizes that the most appropriate thing to do is fire them in the general direction of the enemies, which, considering the role of females in most Hollywood movies, is something that many of them usually only start to figure out halfway through the movie, if at all. She actually stays relatively on course and on cue for most of the movies. Once Nathan Drake tells her that there's going to be dangerous stuff and people shooting and everything, she's just up for it. I mean, she has a sort of like breezy, relaxed attitude that kind of almost gets some humorous reaction with Nathan Drake when she's like, do you understand what's going on here? And she says, yeah, sure I do. Let's go. And it's just, there's just a nice sort of chemistry between the two of them like that. But, like I said, she knows what she's going, she helps out when she can, and obviously definitely has her moments in the game. So even though you're still controlling Nathan Drake, and to be honest, most of the story is still around him with the backstory and him with the connection to Sir Francis Drake and him figuring out pretty much everything because, you know, you're controlling him and you can't. But still, she just really comes across as a great character, and I think as now, if Hollywood movies would at least try to take a bit of effort in that direction, but I digress. As you can see, the music from the game is quite a nice mix. It's, as I said earlier, composed by Greg Edmondson. And he's done work before, largely in TV, with stuff like King of the Hill and Firefly. So I believe Uncharted was the first like big video game project he ever took on. And it's worked out pretty well since he's recorded also on the two sequels to this game as well. He tried to make sure that there was a good mix in the game. They wanted to be adventuring and different and just really get the theme of going out and wilderness and different cultures and everything. So he tried to use some unusual instruments. And the unusual instruments also good for just not making the thing too sound too generic and everything. Like all game composers, he created a nice selection of tracks from different parts of the game. And I think right now I'll play you one other piece of track from that game. It is called Drowned City. And it's kind of a fun bit of the game. Essentially, what's happened is you've ended up after a hectic car chase in an ancient city that's partially drowned or underwater. And so, of course, the best way to get around isn't necessarily by walking the streets because they're underwater. So you get a jet ski. And that's fun enough, except bad guys are shooting at you, which is bad. But fortunately, you get a grenade launcher, which makes things a lot more fun, I have to say. I'll play the track from you now, and as I said, this is from Uncharted Drake's Fortune by Naughty Dog. All right, sounds good. Time for our next track. One of the things I like about what I do in the show is how I completely bounce completely around the gaming radar spectrum. What I had previously on the show was Drake's Uncharted, Drake's Fortune, which was a high AAA, highly realistic rendered video game for next generation console. And what I just played for you was Time to Bounce by Brian Allen Holmes, which was from Burrito Bison by Juicy Beast, which is effectively a fun flash game. Burrito Bison is kind of one of those games with, whereas the previous game, Uncharted Drake's Fortune, would have highly rendered cutscenes involving very powerful 3D modeling, great shaders, and with the entire movement of the actors motion capped, who basically performed their actions in a studio with props and had their movements digitally encoded into a game to provide basically a cinematic movie at various points in the game. Burrito Bison starts with a comic book cutscene, which is basically a comic book that shows you each panel, and then just starts the game. Whereas Uncharted Drake's Fortune was for a next generation console and extremely powerful, this is a flash game that pretty much runs on any computer that connects to the internet. Whereas Uncharted was something like 50 or 60 euros on release, Burrito Bison can be played online for free at all times. So, with that done, what exactly is Burrito? Well, effectively, it's about a Mexican wrestler who suddenly finds himself in Candy World or Candyland or something. Yes, I know. What is going on? Well, apparently, he gets sucked in and now what he wants to do is get out. And that is the entire plot of the game, which is revealed in a brief comic book at the beginning of the game, and that's about it. So, he finds himself in the wrestling rink. He is dealing with a suite of some kind. He tackles it, jumps forward and goes spinning through the air. And that's sort of the whole gameplay of it, basically. The idea is you're spinning through the air and you have to make sure you have to go flying through the air as long and as far as possible. And if you go as long and far enough, then you basically manage to escape the game and escape the air pack, get back into the regular shop and basically win. Now, maintaining yourself in the air is a combination of things. Most of the time, it depends on what you land on. If you land on hard ground, it'll slow you down. But if you citizens that are on the ground below you. So, to be honest, it actually takes its inspiration from a whole genre of flash games that originated several years ago with some game that I can never remember the name of, but was basically some Japanese-inspired game about being a high school student, where at the start of each level, you were slammed into the air by a girl on a bicycle, and the idea was to try to get as far across the screen as you could, and each time you landed, you'd either hit the ground, which would slow you down, or on another student who would either slow you down or hit you, which will get you flying into the air again or something. So it's kind of a bit of an eclectic genre, basically get as far as you can. And in this game, like I said, you're just basically spinning through the air, you're landing on the citizens or you're landing. Sometimes you'll land on a police officer, gummy bear, which will slow you down, and other times you'll manage to hit items in the air, which will keep you aloft. And it's all bright and colourful graphics, and you're all dealing with all this, you know, candy, sweet, you know, themed land, and it's just a fair bit of fun to get going. I remember last week I was talking about the difference between games which, you know, you can get succeed in if you're good enough, and games which you have to put into the time. Well, this game is a bit of a time game, because you have to spend time just to build up your upgrades and hit and, you know, achieve all these objectives that'll give you a little extra bonus points and coins which allow you to get more upgrades and to improve everything. But it's still fun, it's still bright and colourful, and you can still go in a lot of fun places with it. So yeah, that was Burrito Bison, and it was by Juicy Beast. There was a sequel to it, but unfortunately, it just wasn't quite as good. I mean, I don't like criticizing games in general, but one of the problems with the second, with the sequel to this game, is that it let you unlock extra upgrades by paying for them. Now, the real problem with paying for stuff in games is that you're basically trying to suit two different audiences at the same time. The people who will always never pay for anything online, who will never, no matter what the stakes, no matter what the circumstances, they will never pay for extra stuff, unless they might pay for the original game, but just nothing on top of that. And then, of course, there's the other people who just might pay every now and then to speed things up. The problem is what invariably happens is the developer throws in a lot of things that they really have to pay extra. You know, they make it that the optimal way to play the game is to actually pay for items, and that just always annoys me slightly. I was playing the game for a good long while and I was making good progress, but it suddenly came clear to me that if I was paying more money, it would just, the process would go a lot faster. I mean, in all fairness though, I mean, I was able to complete the sequel game as well without having to shell out money, but there was just so many different things, just so much time you have to put in before. Anyway, I'm just That's just me anyway. I just always liked the idea of just when you've got the game, you start it, you play it and everything. But just so many other games are saying, you know, if you pay this or pay that extra money and on top of what you get, you'll have a better experience. And I think that that's okay as long as you can still get the core game experience, and that'll be fine. But just sometimes you're always thinking, you know, damn it, why can't I get this thing? And it's not because I'm not good enough. It's because the developers want more money from me. But, oh well, that's the way it goes. I'm not criticizing Juicy Beast here. Being an indie game development studio is one of the hardest things you can be. And, I don't imagine it's easy for them in any way. And besides, I think a lot of developers, no matter what size you are trying to figure out best ways to make money. It's always tricky. My belief has always been just make the best experience you can and the money will come. But the truth is that technique doesn't always work. But then when you think about it, the technique of be as exploitative as you possibly can and make money by every means that you can also doesn't always work. So if you're going to choose between strategies that doesn't work, I think that you should choose with the strategy that even if it doesn't work out, will leave everyone as best off as they could possibly be. But that's just me. I think we'll move on to another game that wasn't quite developed with the idea of money, because it was developed by a single person who was trying to create a really good game that he really wanted to enjoy. And I think I certainly do enjoy it myself. Have a listen. What you just heard there was the menu theme from Lugaru, kind of a favourite of game of mine, because in a lot of ways it said to me a lot of what indie games should be in some ways. I know that that's technically pigeonholing or categorising indie games, but it's how I feel. Indie Games was released in 2005 from Wolffire Games, which was largely done by one person, David Rosen. I don't know who did the music, so I don't know if David Rosen did it or if he licensed it. I'm sorry, I'm usually a little bit better than this. But in any event, it suits the music, is generally ambient. Now, it was, as I said, it was released in 2005, and back then, indie game scene, you know, like, whereas today you can easily get tons of indie games coming out, back then they were a rare thing, and pretty much every indie game was released. As I said, it was released online, on the internet, you bought it and downloaded it through your credit card and downloaded it onto your computer. This was actually just about the time that Steam was being developed, but it was a while before it became popular, So essentially having a game that was only distributable online, it sort of set you apart a little. So the story with most of these games was that just one or two people made it. It was sort of out of fun or just to see how it goes, or even just to take a great big risk on the business side of things. But what you did get was a very diverse selection of stuff, and that's what I kind of liked about it. There were political simulators, one grass cutting simulation, and this one, which is Lugaru. Now, of course, these games with small teams, they could never compete with the whole, you know, and it's still hard for them to compete with the massive, gigantic million-dollar budgeted games that were, like, very, very dominant then, and still kind of dominant now, although, obviously, with the iPhone and all the games and apps, you know, it's clear that game competition can come from any direction. But back then, the AAA was the main competition, and the indie games were tricky in figuring out how to fight against them. And what I think Lugaru did was brilliant. It's that it focused on doing one key aspect, something highly focused and just very well in what it did. And that's why I freaking loved it. You are basically dealing with a martial arts bunny rabbit. I know it sounds ridiculous, but honestly, the game treats the concept dead seriously, and it works. It's kind of like this ambience of a samurai movie, and I haven't watched many samurai movies, so I'm not so sure, but the whole idea is that, you know, you're part of a village, and you're suddenly drawn aside, and then suddenly you find your family murdered, and you're going on this great big quest to both of vengeance and to figure out all the political machinations of your bunny civilization that caused this problem. The whole core of the game is all this high tense martial arts. And what's more is that it's actually pretty brutal. There's basically, there's suddenly knives, swords involved, there's blood, and but it's also an extremely tight combat system. You know, have to know when to duck, when to punch, when to jump. There's a whole large combination of martial arts moves. This is not a game. Remember I said before about sometimes games are more about time and skill. This is entirely skill. The only thing that you can occasionally do to upgrade your skill level is to grab a weapon, which can easily be knocked out of your hand. So it's entirely dependent on your skills, your reaction, just hitting, jumping, ducking. And there's a whole array of moves. Everything from just standard counter reversals, which are fun, just to the leaping kick, to smash, to running up and just smashing someone from behind. And then, of course, also you're also able to do stealth a lot, sometimes with your bare hands and sometimes with a knife, or sometimes, you know, you'll just try to stab someone a few times with a knife, take a double backflip backwards, and then just throw the knife at them. The whole combat just revolves around a series of rules, but they're just really well executed, and it's just great how you're just able to just try to get the right coordinations and the right sense of actions just really help you defeat the enemy. And like I said, because of the nature of the game, if you defeat the enemy, it's because you applied your own skill and just did the best job possible. And that's just something that's great relief about the game. As I said, the game focuses on this, and that's great. The cutscenes are fairly simple. The sound effects, the environments are very bright and colourful, but, you know, pretty standard. But none of this means that the game developer is lazy. It means that the developer has actually puts in a lot of attention in the areas which need it. For instance, there's something simple like if you stab a rabbit if you jump right through a bush, it just rustles and then leaves fall in just the right place. If you walk over snow, there are footprints in the right place. If you stab someone with a knife and then you can get blood on it, and then the rabbits can sniff that blood. So the only way of dealing with that is to stab the knife in the ground, and then suddenly it'll clean the sword or dagger, and then suddenly leave a bit of blood on the ground. So there's just a lot of really like subtle hit. There's a lot of subtle things. The detail in the game, the real effort is in the area that it needs to be. And that's one of the reasons I felt it was a lot about where indie games should be, because every indie game has limited resources, so they need to focus on just getting on exactly what they're trying to do, what experience they're trying to convey, and put their energy and time into exactly that experience, and then just leave everything else just to say, well, I mean, it would be nice if that would be better, but it's not part of the core experience, and we don't have the resources, so just focus on what's really important, that'll really push it forward. And that left Lugara with a game that maybe not everybody likes, but I just really loved it for just the whole experience, for the whole tenseness of the combat and everything. And it's just a good game. Its tone, its seriousness, its skill, just everything in making a great fighting game. There is a sequel that's been in development for about 3 years. It's called Overgrowth, and it's unique for a couple of reasons. For a start, it's basically it's Luguru, but the developer really wants to go out. This time he knows that the game is popular, that people are paying attention, and he wants to put in all the efforts to make it like really high quality, top-notch technology, great level editing software, the whole shebang. And what's more, he wants to let people know what's going on. Overgrowth turned out, whereas Lugaroo was one of the pioneering games in indie games in general, although, you know, not necessarily the first, Overgrowth is the same for kind of pioneering when it comes to alpha funding. This is when people pay for the game long before it's released. I know it sort of sounds like crowdfunding, but hear me out. And in return, they get an early version of the game. It's called alpha funding. People constantly get weekly updates or monthly or whatever, regular updates of the game as the developers are working on it. And they get to see how the game is developed or see new features. And they might even be able to put their own input in saying what features they think are good or what features they think aren't. And even if you're not part of this whole thing, he's been releasing weekly development videos explaining all the cool new features, what recent additions he's made, and different stuff like that. And it's given people a real sense of a bit more about how game development comes about, all the many different components that come together to make a good game. And overall, I think it's just made it, it's just a lot of people are anticipating an Overgrowth who have paid for it and got their earlier versions and just waiting for a full release. So like I said, Overgrowth and Lugaroo, both by Wolfire Games. And well, I think that's all we've got time for this show. This has been David Collins with BitNote. Thank you for listening, and I'll leave you with Barren Wastelands from Lugaroo.